Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
Hi, I'm Kristen Cloak, and you are listening to The X-Cast.
Back to the X-Cast, the truth is in here. I'm your host, Paige Schechter, and today's show has a bit of a familiar bent to it in more ways than one. Our guest today is Holly Dale, a seasoned television director who has taken up the reins on the likes of Castle, Grimm, Cold Case, Dexter, The Americans, and even a Kyle XY episode with our favorite rat boy, Nicholas Lee, before directing Season 11, Episode 8's Old School X-Files episode, Familiar. Welcome, Holly, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, we'll be running down the specifics of the episode and covering a lot of ground with questions asked by regular listeners of the podcast via the X-Files Basement podcast group at Facebook. But let's start with how Familiar actually came to you, Holly.
I actually was brought in by Fox, and they were looking for a female director, and I got picked, which was terrific because I was a major X-Files fan all the years that it was on in the first run.
Did you feel any pressure? I know there was a lot of media attention on the number of women being employed by the series. Did you feel any pressure in that regard?
No. When I first got the job, it was like, oh, great, this is going to be fantastic, my favorite show ever, I'm going to be directing it. But Chris Carter is such a wonderful human being and so loving and caring that I didn't feel any pressure, and I just felt part of the family immediately.
Oh, that must have been exactly what you needed.
It was fabulous.
Okay, so you said you were a major X-Files fan. Let's talk about what some of your favorite episodes were.
Well, it's been a long time. I think to be specific about episodes, that's hard for me to do right now because it's been 20 years?
Okay, so you're not going back and watching them as much as some of us are.
No, I'm not. I must confess, I'm not.
So did you go back and study any of these old episodes when you were preparing to do this?
No, I did not. But what I did do is look at the first season of the new run.
Right. Okay. And that must have felt a little bit different than how the original series was, because you know these characters have grown up and things have changed and times have changed and the culture has changed.
Absolutely. And I found that with the new shows, it took much more comedy into it.
Yeah, well, they have been making us laugh quite a bit.
Yeah, and it's terrific.
What about some of your work on other shows that you've done? You know, your body of work is very substantial. Did working on shows like Grimm give you ideas of what to do with Familiar?
You know, I have worked in many different genres. I've done over 200 hours of television. So I think it's just I have developed an ability when reading the script to understand the tone and adapt just because of all the experience I have.
When you read the script, which was written by Benjamin Van Allen, he was a writer's assistant on season 10 and then joined the writing staff this season, but this was his first script with his name on it. How much did you work with him on it?
Oh, we worked very closely. He was on set with me every day, and I must say I was so impressed with him. He's a very young, new writer, and he just has such a great understanding of the story. And of course, being Chris's personal assistant, he is, you know, X-Files is in his blood, but I just think he is so talented and he's going to be such a great director.
What kind of ways did he help you through the process?
Well, on a daily basis, whenever we would do a scene, if he would always be there to point out a detail or a note or the intent of something if it wasn't quite there when I was doing it, which was terrific. He also had a great sense of what is scary and spooky in the X-File vein. So he was, I got to say, he was like my partner in crime.
And it that must have been such a relief. So what was your first day like? You were on the set of the X-Files, and you've done so much television, but was there still kind of like, I'm doing an X-Files?
Absolutely. It felt like I stepped inside the television. It was amazing to suddenly be there and have David and Jillian in front of me when I've been fans forever, and here we are some 20 years later, and they're standing in front of me, and I'm giving them direction. It's absolutely like stepping into a television.
That must have been a little bizarre. You're like,
it was a bit X-File-y itself.
Did they give you assistance as well?
Oh, no. You know, they're there to act. They take their direction. They're really terrific about taking direction. You know, they've done, I can't even guess. How many episodes of X-Files has there been in total? Do you know? That's like you asked me my favorite episode. You can't think right off the top of your head.
I can't think off the top of my head. 150, 200, something like that.
Oh, how many years did it run?
It ran 9, and then there were the 6 last year and 10 this year.
Yeah, so we're talking around what you just said. And yet, even with that, they still are open to direction because these are people who have done it all. And they know their characters, but they still are open for input. They were terrific.
Was that one of the things that might have given you pause when you started? Like, oh, they've done it so long, and here I am coming in. But it must have been nice for them to be so welcoming in that way.
Absolutely. It's very daunting when you go on a show. I've been on many shows where, you know, the main character has been doing it for 10, 15 years. And when you come on, it's really strange to say, well, I think you're, and you give them a bit of direction when you know they've been doing it so long, and they were inviting to it. And it is probably one of the toughest things of coming on a show that's been around the longest time is you're the new kid in town and you're telling them how it should be.
Right.
And I'm sure there'd be resistance if something didn't feel right, but I guess it felt right because they were really great about it.
Did they seem to know that they were sort of running an old school X-Files episode?
No, not really. It was funny, Emily, it was like, I think we were in a tent one night and they were saying, Emily, that was the name of my daughter. And it was like, it wasn't intended that the name be Emily. It was a coincidence. I think that, you know, you got to realize when an actor does a series, when they're in the middle of like, they're on episode 7 or something, and there's 13. It is all one big episode to them. So I don't really get the feeling that they realize that. I don't know if anybody really realized it until it was done.
Right. And then the social media attention starts, and everybody is like, oh, old school X-Files.
Yes, absolutely. I think probably part of that, you know, Benjamin, even though it was before his time, he's so young, he's seen all the old school X-Files, and I'm sure that was his inspiration for his script.
Now, how much was Chris Carter involved in pre-production and the filming?
Well, Chris will sit me down. He'll sit any director down that's new. A lot of these, you know, I'm going to just do a sidebar to your question. You know, there was all this flack about women not being hired on the X-Files, but it was kind of unfair because they're all auteurs. These are guys who are writing their scripts and directing them. So it's not like a bunch of writers write scripts and then they hire a bunch of directors. These are people making their own shows. And that's why Benjamin was new and I was new. And Chris was so giving and loving because I had heard this, you know, they have had no women directors. And I thought, well, that's weird. They're directing their own stuff. And it's so true. And I'm sure Carol, the other woman director, experienced the same thing. She was originally a script supervisor, as you may know, mm-hmm. on the show. But Chris sat me down as he does, as most shows do, the showrunner will sit the director down and go through the entire script before you shoot and talk about the tone, the intent, what the characters should be like and how, with guest stars, things, acting habits you should look out for. there's such a great conversation of about 4 hours before you do the show that it's so helpful, and it plugs you into where you should be.
So you really got sort of a free rein when it came to design and the look of the episode?
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, of course, I have to go for the tone of the show, but I pick all the locations. I pick the forest, and all the other locations. And we had pretty well I guess what you would say is that after I pick everything, then things would go by Chris to make sure it was what he wanted, because he is the king.
Right.
He is the most amazing. I can't say enough good things about him, because without him, there would never be an X-Files. You can have Jillian, you can have David, but he is the person that created this. He's the one that has brought all these people in. And, you know, it's something that I don't know how much people really realize.
They probably don't give him enough credit for it, because they're sitting there nitpicking on the little details they don't like.
Exactly.
So you're in Vancouver in a forest, and right there, that seems kind of old school X-Files. But you got the rain going. Was that the rain brought in?
No, that was God's rain, not our rain. And what was really, really interesting is that it was very, very foggy. So foggy that we actually had times where we had to wait a few hours before we could film, because you couldn't see anything. You know that the scene in the playground where it's a wide shot and you see all the cop cars when the fight happens?
Right.
There was absolutely no visibility. It was all fog. We had to wait till it went down a bit. And the irony is that, okay, so the fog's gone, we could shoot. Bring in the smoke. And so they bring in the smoke. So you're creating, you wait for the fog to go away to put in the fog you can control. It's quite funny.
That's television, right?
Yeah.
It's movie making. What aspect of making Familiar was the most challenging for you? And two-part question, was it what you thought was going to be most challenging when you went into it?
Well, the most challenging was, in fact, the rain, because it comes and it goes, and it causes problems when you're shooting because of matching and things like that. And no, it wasn't what I thought would be the most challenging. You know, I would think it would be something in the story, something with the characters, but it was just the physicality of making. It was a really, really hard show physically to make, because we were up and down hills. We were in the dark in the forest where there's uneven ground. And I would say that was the biggest challenge. When we were actually making the show, my biggest concern was finding a little kid that we could direct. A four-year-old kid we could direct. And we got so lucky with Sebastian. And he is like a little man walking around. I mean, he's amazing. He takes direction. He's attentive. He laid on that morgue slab forever and, like, just laid there. Was a good boy. And he walking through the forest with Mr. Chuckleteeth. He did exactly everything he should do. So that was a blessing. I thought that would be a major challenge. But we got very lucky with the casting of him.
Yeah, a lot of people online were asking about that, like involved with the autopsy scene, and what do you tell him? You know, he's an actor, but he's a little boy. What do you tell him about?
You probably have heard that we told him that he's playing a zombie, and he was, you know, the delicate part was he was at an age where he hasn't really been explained about death and about dying and things like that. So you don't want to scare him and create dreams, because, you know, they can be impressionable for the rest of your life. So we treated it all as if it was a zombie, and everybody's familiar with zombies, The Walking Dead. And so he thought he was a sleeping zombie. That's what we call them.
That seems to be a good way to have handled it. And I'm
it
sure
was. He loved it. He kept saying, I'm a sleeping zombie. I'm a sleeping zombie. As opposed to, I don't think he'd be so cheery if he was saying, I'm dead.
Did he ever get scared at any of the things he was having to do?
No, everybody was so, so delicate with him. And we kept a very happy mood on set. And he fell in love.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
You know, the other thing that's interesting could happen with a four-year-old. You see that big head of Mr. Chuckleteeth. You could get scared and cried. As a matter of fact, we had a scene when Sebastian is laying dead on the ground, and the hours got too long for him, so we had to use a double. You know, when you see that hand, you just see a little kid laying there in the hand, and the cops come up.
Mm-hmm.
That kid saw Mr. Chuckleteeth's face just in the little doll that was on the ground, and he started crying and crying. And so we got very lucky that the mask didn't scare him, because clowns often scare kids, and so do big masks. So, again, we got so lucky that he fell in love with it that he clung to the puppet all the time.
That does sound like a fortunate circumstance. Yeah. What about with Emma Oliver, who played Emily?
She was terrific. Her and Sebastian became fast friends, and so it became a joy for them because they had new buddies and everything was good.
Oh, they were going through it together.
And, yeah.
And, you know, 20 years from today, they'll be at some sci-fi convention talking
probably
about what it was like to be on the set.
Probably.
And then you have David and Jillian, who are both, you know, known to be really great with working with the children.
Oh, they were. They were talking and playing with them all the time. And they were also very sensitive. When he was laying on the slab, David would do the little things like a little tickle on his toe or something. He was very, very sweet to him. They both have little children. So, well, his kids grown, but Jillian has a young child. So.
Yeah, they know how to do that. Plus, they've had to work with lots of, I don't want to say creepy children on the show, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Okay, so Mr. Chuckleteeth, who is everybody's new favorite scary villain, was played by Keith Arbuthnot, and we've actually seen a lot of him this season, even if we didn't quite know we were seeing him, because he was the Segway riding alien in The Lost Art of Forehead Sweat. He was the title character in Ghoulie and Chatterman in Home Again. So he's quite good at the physicality beyond a mask or makeup.
Yeah.
Is that what made him perfect for Mr. Chuckleteeth?
Yeah, we wanted for sure to use him because he's really great with his body. He has, he really understands how to make his body move and be interesting.
Was he creeping people out on the set?
Yeah, pretty much. Everybody go. Yeah, absolutely. And also the Biggle Tiggles were pretty creepy too.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about those. Is it because you couldn't actually be Teletubbies that you were just like the creepiest faux Teletubbies there were?
I refuse to answer on grounds that may tend to incriminate me.
And also the hellhounds. Now, people found them to be really scary and fitting nicely into the context of the show.
And the CGI is amazing. The monkey is a CGI monkey.
Oh, my goodness.
I know, huh?
I didn't realize that.
We put a little stuffed monkey in there for a lighting reference. And then we took the monkey out and we shot the cage. And they built that monkey. I can't believe how amazing it is. I mean, they can do almost everything nowadays with effects. But the hellhounds, we had a stuffy black dog, and then we had a black dog that sat in again as a lighting reference, because what they do is they put the animal or the stuffy in so that they can see how the light that is lighting the set hits it, so they can duplicate that when they actually create the CGI animals. So that's why they do a blank plate, because they need to put it in with nothing there, but they want to know how the lighting should be. It's absolutely amazing.
Especially with a monkey. You couldn't tell. I thought that was a real monkey. I fell for it.
Well, I mean, the thing, too, is that the work that goes in to put the monkey behind a cage is so difficult that I was just shocked. I didn't think it would be so great.
I think the heart of the episode is Officer Wentworth, who was played by Roger Cross. He had been in 4 episodes during the regular run, E.B., Fresh Bones, Pusher, and Foley I Do. And he's so nuanced in the role. He really grounds it and gives it gravity.
Yeah, I've worked with him many, many times. And he's a fantastic actor, as you know him from 24 and a number of other shows. And he's like a go-to actor. You know, when you cast him, you're not going to have to give him a lot of direction. He gets very grounded quickly in the character. And it's amazing because he's one of those actors, like some actors come on set and they have to be all serious and they're in the character and you don't really talk to them except about the character. You can't like just have a chit chat with them because they're so focused. And then someone like him, he comes out, he jokes, he hugs people, he's, you know, kidding around, and then suddenly you say action and he's like this other person. He really easily gets into his role and he gets into it deep. He's great.
And that's why he's a go-to guy.
Yeah.
Okay, during the regular run of the X-Files, the episode home about the inbreeding peacock family, now you probably remember that one, even if you can't quite remember how you remember it, about how the mother was under the bed and the boys were all deformed and having sex with their mother and
right.
There was a dead baby. That was widely considered the most disturbing episode of the show. But then fans said you took over the mantle with this one, although...
Oh my God, really? Wow.
I'm not sure it might not have been wrested away from you the next week with Nothing Lasts Forever. But were you really going for an unsettling feeling like that?
Oh, absolutely. That's the charm of The X-Files. I remember when I watched The X-Files, anytime I'd watch it, I couldn't sleep that night. And that, to me, is the mantra of what you need to do with an X-File is create one that people are just, like, they can't get it out of their head afterwards.
It's pretty hard to do in this day and age, though. It'd still creep people out to the level which Mr. Chuckleteeth and those giggly biddlies did.
Biggle tickles.
Can't get that right.
It took me a while to.
What did you learn from directing this particular episode that you think you'll be using as you move on with your career?
Well, the funny answer is I learned to wear a raincoat. I didn't have a raincoat, and I will always have one the rest of my career. That's my first thought.
Okay.
Dealing with the show, I think the memory of this show, as I said, I've done over 200 shows, and a few shows just stay in my memory, like Dexter stays in my memory, American stays in my memory. I think this is one of those shows that I'm always going to, when I think of my career, jump back to. It's one of my favorite ones that I've done. And it was an honor to do it. I was very fortunate, even though it's his first script, to get such a great script. And the environment was so loving and caring that it was just fun to do.
No. We don't know what the future of the X-Files is. I mean, people expect it to be over, but it could be rebooted. Would you want to come back and do some more of these?
Without question. I mean, we all have heard Jillian saying she's not coming back. I have no idea what the future of the X-Files is. There is a son. I don't know.
Right.
But under any circumstance, I was just saying to my manager on Friday that whatever Chris Carter does, I would always want to be part of it. There's just a great vibe. And Glenn Morgan, another really, you know, great producer. And a lot of great producers. And I would always, always come back to the X-Files or anything they did.
Okay, can we have time to do a little word association if you want to? And when I say to you, David Duchovny, what is the first thing you think?
Such a sweet guy.
And Gillian Anderson?
Really serious and really professional.
And let's talk a little more about some of the cast from the show. We had Alex Carter as Chief Strong. What do you think about when you think of Alex?
I worked with him 20 years ago.
So you were renewing old ties?
Yeah, a lot of these characters, indeed.
And Jason Gray Stanford, who played Eggers?
One wild and crazy guy.
Uh-oh, there seems to be more there.
Well, he's got a lot of energy. It's like he's an excellent actor, and he's like talking to a jumping bean.
And now I'm picturing jumping beans. Okay, Erin Chambers, who played Anna Strong,
terrific,
and she has a heck of a scream because when she was on fire, that was one whale of a scream there.
Yeah.
And Sharon Taylor, who played Diane?
Really surprisingly, really good.
So you must have that a lot, like on set. You know, you have a good idea of how things are going to go, but there are always going to be surprises.
Yeah, and in the case of Sharon, it's not a really large role, and when you don't have a really large role, you end up hiring usually somebody who hasn't done a lot of work. They're building their career. Sharon, we got very lucky because she already had a career, and she wanted to do it because it's, you know, X-Files is like fly tape. Everybody just sticks to it. It's like glue. Everybody, if it's an X-Files, I think people will do it if it's like three words just to be in this historical, amazing series. And so we got Sharon, and she was, I thought she was really good for the little role that she had. A lot of it was just facial expression and emotion.
Now, you've been so busy. Have you been able to watch any of the other episodes from this season?
No, I haven't really seen, because when I did my show, I didn't have them yet, and I have not had an opportunity, no.
But as a big X-Files fan, I'm sure they're on your Netflix, well, your Hulu list, or...
Yes, I have a break. I have a break at the end of April, and my intent is to binge. I just hope it comes back. Even if I don't end up doing it, the X-Files should go on forever.
I think it's a really viable concept. And, you know, if Jillian doesn't want to do it or David can't come back, there are still ways to make this go on, because there are a lot of great stories like this one that Benjamin wrote and that you directed.
Yeah, I totally agree. You know, the cast is great, and I can't imagine the show without them. But things do get reinvented, so if they don't want to come back, I'm sure Chris, with his genius, and Glenn will find a way to do it.
So what is next for you on your plate?
I just finished doing the SEAL team, which is in L.A., and I also did Timeless in L.A., and right now I'm doing a new show called Take Two from the people that make Castle.
Oh, those are great. I think everybody is going to be looking out for them as well.
Yeah, Timeless is a good show, I think, for X-Files fans to see, because, again, it's more fantasy.
I think Timeless is really, really gaining in popularity here, and it's coming on, and it was renewed, and people are very excited about that.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Holly.
It was such a pleasure. Thank you.
As for me, I'm continuing my weekly rewatch blog called Sibling Cinema with my sister on Blogger. And you can find me on Twitter at x-pai or the group at the X-Cast, and also on Facebook at the X-Files Basement, the X-Cast podcast fan group. Until next time, trust no one.
The X-Cast and X-Files podcast is produced and presented by Tony Black, alongside a dedicated group of podcasters and X-Files fans. You can find us on Twitter at The X-Cast, and on Facebook if you type in The X-Cast, or at our group, X-Files Basement, an X-Cast podcast fan group, where you can continue the discussion about all things Mulder and Scully. If you want to support The X-Cast further, you can now subscribe and become a patron of the show on Patreon. On Google, just type patreon.com/TheXcast. That's PATREON. You'll see all of our tiers, subscription options and perks, which include early access to episodes, bonus content such as commentaries on X-Files episodes, access to a patron chat zone, and even appearing on one of our patron roundtable discussions. We would appreciate any support you can give the show, so just go to patreon.com/TheXcast to find out more. Our title music is provided courtesy of Will A, who you can find on Twitter at IamWillAye.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.